Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano. Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Ether. Today, I have Rick Dudley on the podcast. Rick is a blockchain architect who has been around Ethereum since the beginning. He is currently working on Vulcanize, a consultancy firm he founded. Thanks for joining me today, Rick.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. So I like to always kind of start first with a little bit of background information. So can you kind of talk about yourself and then how you eventually ended up getting involved with Ethereum?
Yeah, so I've been a computer enthusiast, you know, my whole life, and was really into, you know, the hacker scene in the 90s. And I was at a friend of mine was throwing a hacker convention in, I guess, 2014. And I met some guys there who were really into Dogecoin. And we sort of started talking. And I knew about Bitcoin, but I didn't really pay a lot of attention to it or whatever. So in talking to them about Dogecoin and stuff, they asked me to talk about, you know, they asked me to go to this Ethereum meetup. And I did that. And then in doing that, you know, that's how I got involved in Ethereum, was talking to them about, at that meetup, there was Gavin, Vitalik, Yinta, Joe Lubin, a bunch of people, because it was like during the roadshow, I guess it was November 2015, there was an Ethereum meetup in New York. And that's how I met Joe Lubin and then later got involved in Ethereum.
Nice. So Doge led you to Ethereum.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't active in Doge, but yeah, I mean, it was someone's excitement around Doge, and then they got me into Ethereum.
Nice. And I know since then up till like now, and I want to dive into Vulcanize and then obviously into Ethereum deeper, but I know you've worked on a couple different projects in Ethereum to this point. What have those been so far?
Well, it'll be an incomplete list. I've worked for a number of practical reasons. I've worked on, there's a project from Consensus called Virtue Poker that I started with a different protocol, but it was called Ether Poker. Then I worked at Monax, which was called Aris Industries at the time. So the Hyperledger Burrow project is what I worked on. And in doing that, we were deploying, 40 node Tendermint clusters back in 2016. From there, I've advised a number of different projects. So over a 3-year period, I had advised over 20 projects at various levels. I guess I'm trying to think of places where my name was on a paper or something. So OmiseGo, Omega One. I work now with a company called Wireline. I've done a lot of work with MakerDAO. Obviously, I do work with the Ethereum Foundation as well. So I've received a grant from them, and now I'm doing this working group stuff with them as well. And then there's a lot of other projects that I've worked with that I've advised, but I don't really keep track of which ones have announced and which ones haven't. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a solid list. I mean, Maker, Omise, those are good projects. So I guess that leads us a little bit to Vulcanize. I mean, to be honest, to me, it's a little bit under the radar. Like I've gone to the website a couple times in the past, I guess, and it just kind of is a landing page with not much there. But I know that you guys are pretty active on working and stuff. Can you just talk a little bit about Vulcanize and what the project is?
Yeah, so there's this unbranded product, Vulcanize DB, that is a verifiable third-party verifiable indexing and caching service for Ethereum data. So basically what that means is a dApp developer can have a third-party set up a node running Vulcanize DB, and then the users of that dApp can hit that cached data instead of trying to access like a Geth node, and those users will have a cryptographic, will have a Merkle proof, a cryptographic guarantee, that the data that they're receiving from that cache is in fact the data from the Ethereum blockchain. And so that's the goal. And there's obviously a lot of benefits to everyone involved. We're making Ethereum data more available to the end users. We're lightening the load of the dApp developer and running their own caching service, which any serious dApp today is running their own caching service. Well, there's some exceptions, but generally speaking, that's the case. And then we're also, provided, these people will be economically, paid in ETH to run these caches. So it's the goal of the project is to increase data availability in a decentralized way, and to sort of, you know, just make things run more smoothly in the Ethereum ecosystem. It's blockchain agnostic, but you know, as I pointed out, my projects I started on are Ethereum projects. That's where the demand is right now. You don't really need something like this for a Bitcoin, but the techniques are primarily blockchain agnostic. But yeah, we're starting and focusing on Ethereum.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds like a cool project. I mean, I love kind of a lot of stuff I do is diving into the data, and it's just not very easy to come by these days. So anything that's going to kind of push that, and that sounds pretty cool to economically incentivize people to run the caches as well, because then, you know, you're going to get probably more participation there, obviously, which is neat. Is there any kind of like timeline for release? Is it kind of like a per dApp implementation for people to kind of look at that individual dApp's data? Or is there kind of a bigger push for maybe like a block explorer or something like that too?
Yeah, that's a good question. So our Ethereum grant is for a block explorer. So we're building that out. And then what that would mean is that different people could actually shard the block explorer. So not really going to get into the details of that because it's kind of technically complicated, but the idea is that by using VulcanizeDB to back a block explorer, it's much easier to scale the block explorer. If you're only interested in blocks associated with a certain dApp, it becomes very easy to do that, for example. And again, many dApps have this use case. Yeah, so the block explorer is going to, I would say, come out in the next 2 months. Just timetable-wise, we have to release it. That's the, you know, for the grant. And then so VulcanizeDB exists right now, github.com/Vulcanize/VulcanizeDB. It's under very active development. It is very client focused, so it's not super easy to deploy right now, but it is possible. We have gotten, you know, relatively, you know, people onboarded very quickly from our end, but they had to talk to us, so it's not the easiest onboarding experience, frankly. You know, the plan is to basically either multi-collateral DAI will be released, or we will complete the EF grant, whichever one of those comes first. We're going to actually start to have a real public, you know, announcement and community engagement on the project. And we're starting to do some of that now, but I wanted the code to be at production quality before we did that. And it's not really at production quality. It's very close, but it's not quite at production quality right now.
Nice. So I'm excited to check that out for sure. So to keep an eye out for it, definitely. I mean, I think that's a good transition then into, I want to talk about where we're at with Ethereum today, then on to 1.x, and then on to 2.0, and kind of get your take on things. I know you've been around a while, and you and I have had some back and forth on Twitter throughout the last year or so, which have all been enjoyable, but I kind of enjoy your takes on things. I would say they're a bit more kind of like on the realistic side, and sometimes we need those takes and not be too optimistic when it comes to things. And I think Anthony and I try to do that on kind of our weekly recaps, not be too bullish on things, but grab your takes on kind of where the development of Ethereum is happening right now. So I guess I'll first start. I mean, you, like I mentioned, you've been around for a while since the beginning. Is Ethereum today kind of where you envisioned it would be? Maybe that's a bit of an unfair question, but where do you think we've succeeded so far? Where do you think we've failed?
So it's an interesting question. I mean, when I first heard the proposal, I was extremely skeptical. I didn't think that a DEX, it wasn't really being called a DEX in the presentation, but the Gavin proposed a DEX in this presentation. I didn't think that would be possible based on my experience, in my limited experience in financial technology. It didn't seem reasonable. I didn't think that, I thought that the block times would be problematic. And I think both of those things, basically for the reasons that I thought are true. I was skeptical that you needed a Turing complete language. We have reentry attacks. We have all these other issues. So I think that part was mostly correct. So I guess in a sense, I was pretty bearish when I started working on Ethereum. I was excited about the opportunity that there was even a group of people even trying these things. I had been in 2006, I started looking at some of these techniques that we now call provably fair gaming. And I filed a patent for it in February 2007. And so, you know, working at ConsenSys, I was just very excited to have an opportunity at all to work on that kind of technology. So in that sense, I think the community as a large, I mean, especially like EOS and Tron with the gambling apps, that was sort of what I thought would happen. So in a sense, but only sort of, right? Because there's a difficult time getting entropy on the chain. And so I guess at the time, I was focused on looking at proof of stake early on. And I was focused on how to get large volumes of entropy on the chain and sort of maintaining the independence of apps. So that was the first time I was really looking at how to maintain the independence of apps, of dApps, even though they're on the same chain. And so I guess in a sense, things are, well, I would say from a marketing perspective and from an exposure and size of the ecosystem, much better than what I thought it would be from an excitement perspective. From a technical perspective, I think I would have thought at the time that there would have been more aggressive work towards solving the known problems that were known, you know, even early 2014, these problems were known. Andrew Miller gives a great post on the old Ethereum forum, which I always reference whenever I get an opportunity, because he described reentry attacks beautifully, well in advance of when any attacks actually occur. So there's a lot of issues in Ethereum today that persist that were known. And, you know, so I think that the success has been in launching a network at all. I mean, to Gavin's credit, I mean, the network got launched at all. But I think where we failed collectively as a community is in taking that sort of first pass and aggressively iterating on it to the point where it really does support the production vision of, I don't think I'm very bullish on or bearish on the world computer concept. I don't think it's really a great idea. But if people are going to have that idea, then I feel like they should have done more to make it happen than what has been done since the launch.
Yeah, so I 100% agree with you on the world computer narrative. I'm not a fan of that at all, and really not too sure how it got spurred. And I guess it was like 2016 at this point. So I fully agree with you there. I'm interested in your take on. So I do agree with you. I think progress on kind of fixing our known problems. I mean, you know, we've only had even just two forks with some minor upgrades in the last 2 years, and obviously progress is picking up now on Ethereum 2.0. I think, but everybody kind of wanted proof of stake earlier and all that stuff. I guess so it goes with software development. But from your perspective, what do you think the community as a whole could do better to kind of start to make progress on these things that you're talking about?
So yeah, I mean, I think overall, we could all of us be a little bit more mature about what we're doing and be a little bit more honest about the difficulty of the work that we're setting out to do and then behave accordingly. So my last talk at ETC, you know, like I said, this year, 2019, was about that. You know, the last part of my speech was basically, you know, we can't, you know, we're trying to do so many things with not enough people. And frankly, I mean, even though the funding is there in some abstract sense, the money isn't really coming out the way that it should. You know, we just have to be honest that we're trying to do this amazingly complicated and difficult thing, instead of saying, oh, we're just trying to make, you know, JavaScript apps, as if that's even a solved problem. But like, we're behaving as if JavaScript is solved, and then we're just trying to, like, you know, season a little decentralization on it, and that's just going to get done. I don't think that that's how it's going to work. I think that if this is ever going to work, people need to be a lot more committed.
Yeah, and so that's interesting. So you brought up funding, and like, that's obviously a hot topic. I mean, what are your takes there as far as, I mean, we don't need to go deep in the debate of necessarily where it should come from, but do you think there's a funding problem? Do you think having the EF in control of most of the funds is an issue? Are you a believer in some kind of block reward funding? Like, where do you stand on all of that?
Yeah, those are great questions. So it's very complicated, because I think that the main problem is that there are different generations already of people who are contributing to the Ethereum ecosystem. And those different generations have different ideas about funding and what it even means and what projects should be funded. And so I think, strictly speaking, the money is available. Strictly speaking, I don't think that there is an issue with funding. Again, I don't even think the EF really has most of the money, again, to be in a very pedantic sense. I think there's just a lot of problems around how to get people the original group of people who, you know, who started Ethereum and were the initial Genesis block investors, you know, people from the Bitcoin community, and they're synonymous, and they have a lot of the Ether, and so they have a lot of dollars now, and or access to dollars, to be more precise. And I don't think that those people view their, I don't think they think that there's a funding issue. I think that they think that there's a, you're not capturing my interest issue. And I think when teams capture the interest of the original investors, they're successful. When teams capture the interest of JP Morgan, they're successful. When teams capture the interest of ENY or, you know, any of these other people who have, you know, 200 devs on Ethereum or whatever. So I don't think that strictly speaking there's a shortage of funding. I think that there's a lack of clarity in the community around what gets funded and why.
Yeah, I mean, just because you have an idea doesn't necessarily mean you deserve funding, right? I think I agree. I mean, there's a mix of, I think there's some misdirection out there. I also think there's a lot of kind of, hey, we need funding, can you give it to us? And not a lot of structure around that, right? I personally would like to see from teams more of like detailed plans and, you know, updates often and their milestones and goals. I think if we got some formality around that, you're going to see kind of these original investors be more willing to give out funds as opposed to just, hey, we need money, can you give it to us? I don't think that's ever going to be a winning strategy.
Yeah. And I think that's, to answer the rest of your question, I think that's my issue with the block reward, right? I mean, the way that the block reward proposal was being discussed, it didn't really map into my mind to any process that I've seen in the past where people got money. I think that providing the tooling for miners to make contributions works. And in fact, we were at the Ethereum Core Devs meeting in Berlin and someone notified me. I wasn't aware of this, but there at one point was a donation address that the Ethereum Foundation had linked to miners or something via somewhere on a web page or something. And they are still getting donations to that address. People are still taking a percentage of their block reward and giving it to that address. So I think that, you know, there should be an overall understanding in the community that if you do engage the miners, which is what we're talking about when we're talking about a block reward, you know, when you engage them via the correct means, they respond and they give money to things that they think are worth giving money to.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I personally think, especially on once we get to ETH 2.0 and staking and validators, I think validator interests are probably more aligned long term with kind of the overall timeline, I guess, or the vision of the network. I think it'll be even easier, in my opinion, once we get to validators, as far as kind of them giving up some money to funding like this.
Oh, I mean, I think that absolutely, like very strongly, I think that validators will take a much more active role in development, and they're much more incentive aligned, I think, than traditional proof of work miners. I think there's a need and a place for both types of validation service in the future, even on the same chain. But yeah, I think that when you're running a proof of stake validator, you're definitely more incentive aligned than a GPU proof of work.
Yeah. Definitely. So you've hinted a couple times at kind of like the interests of the original investors and kind of the original vision. And like I said, I agree with you. I'm not a fan of the world computer vision. To you, kind of what are kind of the ideal apps? Are there ones currently built now that are your favorite kind of up that alley as far as a vision goes, or maybe stuff that's not even built yet? Kind of what do you see as being aligned with that original vision?
Yeah, I mean, I think I honestly, I'm not super clear on what the original vision was. I think that, frankly, you know, I mean, the original vision was to the moon in a lot of regards. But I think that there was definitely a belief that you could run multiple applications on the same proof of work and eventually proof of stake chain. I'm generally skeptical of that, and we have to be careful about how we frame those arguments. So I think that the real killer application for Ethereum, which we are starting to see and is really the power of Ethereum moving forward, and if we have a back and forth about this with some other chains that we can call out that are much more of a threat, I think, to Ethereum than people. It's funny because the way the communities work, there's chains that I think are much more threatening to Ethereum that are never discussed, and I don't, you know, that's fine with me, whatever. But the real application for Ethereum is a proof of work coin that's used as bonding for sidechain networks. So you have basically, I have my dApp. My dApp has its own sidechain. The sidechain validators bond on the Ethereum network in Ether, and then they bond in the sidechain and the sidechain's token, and the rewards for their validation service and the transaction fees are provided in the inflationary token, you know, created by the dApp developer. And then when those chains want to interoperate, they route through Ethereum. You know, this may sound very similar to Cosmos to some people. That's not a coincidence. I'm a big fan of the project, and that was definitely the direction that we were going in at that time. You know, when I was more active in that community, and it wasn't so clear that Ethereum and Cosmos were going in different directions. But I think that moving forward, that's definitely where Ethereum has value is this proof of work coin that can be used to bond people in other networks. And then there's a certain amount of, when you have a coin like that and you have a platform like that, there's a limited set of applications that end up needing to be on that sort of like root chain or main chain or parent chain, whatever you want to call it. And I think supporting those applications and that primary use case, which is very similar to what the Beacon Chain does in Ethereum 2, but not quite the same thing. I think that's the sort of the best case for Ethereum.
Gotcha. Yeah. And do you generally agree with, I mean, one of my biggest problems with a lot of the competitors out there, and I think there's of course going to be, you know, a couple, but I personally don't believe there's going to be, you know, 8 or 10 of them, because my personal belief is that the kind of underlying asset, which in Ethereum's case is obviously Ether, has to have some kind of monetary premium and be kind of at least accepted generally as a form of money or payment in the long term, potentially a store of value, I guess, if we want to get into that as well. Because in my opinion, potentially in the future, that, you know, there could be, well, there's already billions, but billions, trillions worth of assets secured on top of that chain. Do you agree with that sentiment? Do you think that underlying asset, you know, whether it's Ethereum or Cosmos or Polkadot or whatever it is, can you kind of envision there being multiple chains that kind of have a very valuable underlying asset?
Maybe four, right? An ASIC chain, kind of where Bitcoin is today. A GPU chain, you know, maybe where Ethereum is today, or something will come in and fill that void when the transition happens to proof of stake. You know, some privacy coins, Monero, you know, Zcash. And then like the Mimblewimbles, you know, the Grins and Beams. It's hard for me to imagine anything else in terms of native token. And then you sort of get into tricky stuff with things like Rootstock, where, you know, what are roots, you know, maybe a root stock in there as well. But yeah, that's about it. I don't see there being a strong need for much else.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, as you kind of get, kind of water that down more and more, the value is just not going to be there. The demand's just not going to be there, I guess.
Yeah. And the chains are going to get attacked as well. Right. I mean, that's another problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And that's definitely what I mean there. Kind of like, if it's, you know, you can't have billions of assets secured on a chain that's really cheap to attack. So I guess stepping back a little bit, we're kind of venturing into ETH 2.0 and eventually competitors there. I want to talk quickly about the Ethereum 1.x efforts and just kind of get your take there. I guess overall, what's your general feel on these efforts? And are there some kind of more important parts than others? Do you think there's any areas where efforts might be wasted there?
No, I mean, I'm a big fan of Alexei's work. I'm a big proponent of the state fee / state rent discussion. I think it's vitally important for Ethereum 1 and 2. There's, from the ETH Core dev meeting that I was at in Berlin, there wasn't anything on there that I was like, oh, we definitely can just completely ignore this. I mean, there was some stuff, I don't think I'll name names, but there's some stuff I was a little disappointed with, but overall, I think the roadmap is strong for 1X, and I just wish we could all work towards that more efficiently. And what I mean by efficiently is we're extremely frugal, so it's not like the funds are being misallocated. I just wish that we were coordinated a little better and a little more timely in our conversations. I mean, there's certain conversations that probably have taken years to happen and are still, there's still conversations that are years overdue. And it would be nice if we could, you know, get engagement and excitement around those core features and get them out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think 1.x, there's a lot of strong efforts there and stuff that can be reused in 2.0 too, which is really kind of important to me. Do you envision, let's say Ethereum, end of this year, beginning of next year, phase zero goes live. Within a couple of years, we get past phase two. Do you envision the Ethereum 1.x chain living forever, or do you see it just fully dying off?
Oh, I think that there'll be a large fork, right? I think the Ethereum Classic community will have some interesting questions that they need. I mean, they'll have to really look at themselves in the mirror because there'll be a lot of GPU miners that choose to continue to mine the old network.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. I agree. We'll see how that all plays out. I guess on the 1.x efforts, you recently stepped up to be the lead on the fee market change working group. That's actually an EIP, which is 1559, that I co-authored and got out there. So I'm very interested in it. And, you know, I was glad to see you step up and kind of lead that working group. Can you kind of give the listeners a quick overview of that from your perspective, just kind of a fresh perspective? I'm always talking about it on the podcast, but just kind of where you see the value there.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So yeah, your explanations have probably been better than mine, but basically the idea is we're taking the, right now there's a 100% of the fee is discretionary and goes to the miners. And there's a discussion about splitting that into two parts. So some percentage of the fee will be burned and be non-discretionary. Every transaction needs that minimum amount of fee to even be considered. And then there's another, the rest of the fee will be like a premium that will go to the miners. And that change has, you know, that's a pretty big change. It's a pretty important transition to how transactions are processed. And so my interest in that structure or that change is as we move towards state rent, we need to make certain changes to how transactions are processed. And so that's really where it came from my perspective. It's a slightly circuitous route, but not really that bad. Ultimately, at Vulcanize, we're interested in addressing these data availability issues. We're interested in looking at things like, Peter Todd's proof chains are actually a pretty big inspiration for me in terms of thinking about what do you really need on the chain in the first place. I've always complained that transactions don't, in Ethereum, transactions make no, they don't bind to the state. So when we send an Ethereum transaction, it should have some reference to the Merkle root that transaction expects to be applied against. So it's these sorts of changes where we have to start somewhere, right? And like you said, you've made this EIP and Vitalik is behind it and Alexei is behind it and a lot of other people are behind it. And so this is going to get the ball rolling on making the sort of transaction changes we need to really support state rent and, managing state in general through transactions moving forward.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the support behind it. I think it's a solid working group. I mean, anything that, you know, we'll keep talking about on the podcast, but anything kind of the working group needs as far as help or, you know, whatever it might be, even funding, I'm sure we could help try and raise a little bit there too, or just get awareness out there for it. But yeah, I had Alexei on the podcast and he seems to be in support of it too. So I'm very anxious to kind of see how that all plays out.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, I'm always looking for qualified devs to contribute. I mean, we have some devs lined up, but it's always good to have options and have more devs lined up. So I think that's, I mean, for me right now where we're at, we have an EIP isn't a spec, right? So we have to do the work to get from the EIP and the paper that Vitalik wrote to a spec. And then we have to figure out, well, how are we going to actually hire devs to fulfill that spec? And then we've already made some decisions about which client we're going to use first and this sort of that sort of thing. But, you know, for me right now, someone came in on the, I believe it was the ETH Research Forum, although it could be ETH, I think it was actually ETH Magicians, where Alexei made a post. An open source wallet developer stepped right up immediately and said they'd be interested in helping. So that's great. I mean, we'd have to figure out how to integrate that guy into the team and figure out where that is in the roadmap. But it's a very aggressive schedule, 3 months. And so, you know, I'm looking for any dev resources available who are interested.
Cool. Yeah. So anybody wants to get involved, I mean, at a minimum, go to the ETH Magicians or ETH Research post out there, or reach out to Rick or Alexei or whoever's on the working group. So I want to transition now from 1.x into 2.0. I know you've had a few strong words recently. I guess I would put it around the Ethereum 2.0 roadmap. So what's your take on the current state of Ethereum 2.0 as you see it?
Yeah, I mean, bunch of napkins was a little strong, but it is, I mean, I'm a big fan of Danny Ryan, so I wasn't trying to minimize his work in any way. It's just, you know, the work of the dev teams that are working to implement Ethereum 2.0. But on the other hand, I was disappointed by the roadmap. The roadmap wasn't aggressive enough. I'm also sort of disappointed by, I think that the style of development that the Ethereum Foundation sort of started with multiple clients. I think that multiple clients is, I'm kind of neutral on it. It's not the worst idea in the world. It's not the best idea in the world. But in order to do that, you need super clear specifications and you need tests that every client can work against. And I'm not saying that they don't have that with Ethereum 2.0 right now, but that's always the concern, is making sure that the testing is there, making sure the specifications are there. And so I think, you know, as a designer, I'm not a big fan of the beacon chain design. It's not the end of the world. Well, I think, frankly, I think Vlad's design is better. I think bottom-up sharding, like dApp sharding is what I call it, is better, where you just have a pool of validators and then dApps sort of go into a marketplace and hire validators, and those validators are bonded. I think that's a better strategy, which is even looser than the Cosmos strategy, but is somewhat like the Cosmos strategy. So I think that those strategies ultimately are better. And so for me, I like, there's certain things I like about Ethereum 2.0. I like the idea of a beacon chain, in quotes, but I think that there should really be two chain types or even one, and you have like a recursive structure. So I don't know, you know, obviously there's a lot of varied listeners, but what I mean by recursive is I should be able to have more, like I should be able to have like one chain at the top and then have like another layer of chains that have to like get agreement from that top chain. And I should be able to do that for as many levels, you know, as I want to. There should be like a sort of natural law constraint, like physics constraint on how deep I can go there, but there shouldn't be a constraint in the structure of the code. So right now in the Ethereum 2.0 structure, it's two levels. There's the beacon chain. Well, maybe it's three. There's like the original Ethereum chain, then there's the beacon chain, then there's this 120,024 other chains. And really, it should be, instead of 1,024 other chains, it should be like a recursive tree of chains or a recursive DAG of chains beneath that. The counterpoint to that is that's really difficult to reason about. That's really difficult to engineer. That's really difficult to architect. What's being proposed, I think, is correct in its scoping from an architectural perspective. But then if you're going to settle on this suboptimal design, which I think I don't know how Vitalik would exactly phrase it, but I think he understands my points there. Then you have to be super aggressive on the cycle, and you have to have a plan for iterating out of that very quickly, because someone will get it right, in quotes. And so you have to be able to start with that sort of digestible engineering task, and then move it aggressively towards the state of the art, or, you know, the cutting edge of the science. And so I guess that's my main critique of Ethereum 2.0, is that it had the long time frame of a research project, but seemed to be constrained by engineering requirements. And that didn't seem like a good mix. It's like, if you're going to constrain it in this engineering way, then you should be able to release it much faster.
Gotcha. So like, is it your opinion or take that, you know, even once we got to the current 2.0, kind of finish the specs as is, we should then transition into this more ideal state, like maybe even E 3.0, I guess you could call it at that point, or 2.1?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think that the spec, because of the way that the process has been going, and I don't necessarily have, I don't want to be too critical because I don't necessarily have an alternative, but given the way that the process has been going now, I feel like this roadmap would need to have, you know, up to Ethereum 4.0 at the way that they're structured now, and the timeline should be way condensed. And you're like, well, how could you do that if we have all these if we have all these code release issues today, if we have this slow cycle of hard forks today, how can you talk about, well, I mean, that's the issue. The issue is we need to dramatically shorten the time between hard forks. We need to pipeline them so that we're working on hard forks, you know, multiple hard forks at a time. And we need to do all of that management work for the devs. I mean, the Ethereum Foundation, my honest critique is they don't hire, I mean, most places, I've worked very little in the enterprise, but where I have worked in the enterprise, there was always too many managers. And working with the Ethereum Foundation is the first time where I've worked with such a large organization in terms of money and people, where the thing that really seemed to be missing was managers. But there's like, and you know, pros and cons, lean startup, whatever, however you want to frame that, there needs to be more managers, and they need to be really good managers, because it's actually pretty hard work. And we need to be like, have much more aggressive timelines to, I think, achieve the sort of goals that the community sort of sets out for itself.
Yeah. So I guess just put bluntly, do you think we'll get there? Do you envision, you know, ETH 2.0 launched as the specs are written out now, and a full transition of, you know, dApps and the community and users all over to Ethereum 2.0? Because, I mean, there's obviously a lot of naysayers out there still that don't believe the transition to proof of stake and sharding is ever going to happen.
Well, that's tricky, right? I mean, I'm optimistic about proof of stake. I'm optimistic about CBC Casper in particular. Am I optimistic that dApps will transition? Well, to be frank, there's not enough dApps right now where I think that we even have to necessarily worry about that transition. You have two parallel problems. You have the problem that the existing chain doesn't really scale, which it was never really intended to, in defense of Gavin again. And then you have this other problem, which is like there's all this middleware missing. There's all this tooling missing. It's very difficult for developers to onboard onto Ethereum. So VulcanizedDB is trying to resolve some of these middleware issues. But overall, the community absolutely needs to sort of address these problems in parallel. I think Vitalik, is his own human being, and he's welcome to do whatever he wants. He's focusing on these scaling issues, which I think is very important. But I don't think that those scaling issues resolve the usability issues of today. So ironically, this EIP 1559 does help to resolve some very important usability issues, but that's just one EIP about relatively one small slice of the usability problem. There's a lot of usability issues that need to be addressed. And so do I think that Ethereum 2.0 is going to happen? Yeah, I'm pretty confident that it's going to happen. I'm pretty confident that there will be this transition. I think a lot of miners will be left behind. I think a lot of hash power will be left behind. I think certain apps will be left, or dApps will be left behind. But I think that there will be a large transition to Ethereum 2.0. But the risk is that if you don't solve the usability problems for the end users, and you don't solve the usability problems for the developers, then creating this new platform, you know, if you build it, they may not come. So, I mean, to me, that's the bigger concern than sort of the technical specification for Ethereum 2.0.
Yeah, so I fully agree with that. That's something we talk a lot about on the podcast, to be honest. And one of the reasons I put some of my time and effort behind 1559, because I think, you know, the whole fee auction market right now is a complete disaster as far as user experience goes. So I'm curious, kind of beyond that, on the usability front, what do you think are the biggest pain points that we need to solve? Kind of how do we get to mass adoption where, you know, we solve some of these issues, and for an end user, it's not this daunting task to use Ethereum?
Wow. So it's funny, because to be entirely honest, all of my clients, we're really always talking about running our own side chains, right? And by running our own side chain, very much like Spank Chain does, shout out to that team, even though they're doing it with channels, with virtual channels, you're able to manage your user experience. Burner Wallet is another example of this, right? You can manage your user experience by putting only the necessary things on chain and having a layer two solution, as we like to collectively call it, which I'm not sure is such a great name, but whatever. Having layer two solutions sort of address some of these user experience issues. I think that in layer two, having your own wallet, like a burner wallet where you don't need MetaMask, like these kinds of solutions, I think are the answer. But I think that it also requires a sort of grand rethinking of what Ethereum is for, and then what tools should be made. And I think I do think that Ethereum, from a technical perspective, let's ignore the marketing for a minute. From a technical perspective, I think that Ethereum really should focus more on developers and empowering developers to make the user experiences, as opposed, there's like not a good separation of concerns in the community. There's like a lot of people who are trying to like solve all these problems at once. And I think we need to, as things mature, it'll settle out into different layers, right? I think Counterfactual is doing a lot of good work in making it possible to write good apps, but there's still a long way to go.
Some of the other hot topics, I guess, right now before we wrap up are around on-chain governance. Kind of what's your take here? I mean, obviously, a lot of the new, I would say, quote-unquote, Ethereum competitors or Ethereum killers are selling on-chain governance as a feature. I'm not shy in my opinion that I'm not a fan of on-chain governance. But what's your take? And do you think the current Ethereum governance is working and can scale?
I think the current Ethereum governance is working. I think it will scale to what level it needs to scale at. And by working, I mean, again, you know, you have to remember the loudest people on Twitter aren't the largest stakeholders in the community, right? So I think governance is working for the people who really have a say, which is kind of hard to parse out as an outsider, but here we are. I think on-chain governance is an awesome idea, awesome concept. Right now, it doesn't fit in with the Ethereum ethos. So I'm very strong proponent of Tezos and Cosmos and their sort of on-chain governance solutions that they've put out already. I don't think that that's necessarily the right thing for the Ethereum community.
Yeah, gotcha. No, I agree with that. I mean, I think we'll see a lot of experimentation around it, and it'll take years to kind of perfect on some of these other chains. But yeah, I personally don't envision it being a thing for Ethereum personally. You know, Rick, how can people kind of keep up with you and your work? You're obviously, you know, doing a lot of different things and Vulcanized DB and these working groups on ETH 1.x. Kind of what's the best way if people, you know, are kind of hearing you talk and are interested in following your work to keep in touch with you?
Yeah, Twitter probably, AF Dudley Zero is my Twitter handle. That's probably, I mean, that's kind of my only real public facing persona, really. Yeah, because of all the work for the company is word of mouth, and we don't really advertise. Someone actually, a VC that I've never really had an interaction with, to my knowledge, recommended someone, and they sort of like find an email and all this stuff. And I mean, I felt bad for them, and that's actually what prompted me to remove everything from the website. So like, wow, this guy really thought that like he could reach me through the website, and like that's not. I'm not really reachable, frankly. I mean, you know, the best thing to do is talk to me on Twitter, and maybe I'll, you know, get around to it. I try to keep people up to date on what I'm doing. But I think primarily, you know, I mean, there's a joke I could make about paying for it, because some people do actually, I have clients that do pay for that. But I don't expect that to be a regular offer or anything. I think the best way to get in contact or to read about what I'm doing is just Twitter, and just sort of at me at Twitter. Don't DM me, but like at me or whatever, and I'll respond.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for joining me today, Rick. I think this has been a great conversation. I really enjoy your perspective on things, so I think it's been a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on the podcast, and you know, hopefully we'll continue our friendly discussions on the internet.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds good. Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and @zazzle0x.